Anyone have any questions or comments about the practice from today? Anyone would like to bring up?
Yeah, a question. Could you explain again the difference between letting go of the thought and but not suppressing thought?
And this is going to come up a little bit also tomorrow when we look at the mind. But letting go of a thought simply, it really means not, if we notice the thoughts come up, it's not trying to push it away, because that's sort of like suppressing. So all it really means when we let go of a thought, it means to simply to return your attention to the breath. That's all. So, of course, if we're trying to block them or push them away, then they stay there, and then that's just trying to suppress it. So letting go of a thought is simply to notice that we've got caught up in a thought and then immediately just return our attention to whatever the object is, in this case the breath, that's all. So that's all it means to let go of a thought. Otherwise we get into a battle with our thoughts, you know. The thought comes and we're going, you know, go away, go away, go away, and we're trying to push it away. So it just means to shift your attention back. Just shift your attention back to the breath.
So, often when I am on the breathing or whatever object it is, I let in on the breathing. I'm focused on the breathing, or my mind is on the breathing, but at the same time, there's something else happening in the background. And very often, let's say, if I count, when I count especially, I manage to stay on the count, but there is something sometimes happening in the background. If I don't count, sometimes this thing can overtake it, and for a few seconds I might forget at all about the breathing. But if I count, it will usually stay in the background. So yeah. How do I get rid of this?
Yes, this is something that's going to come up in our discussions when we're talking about this chart here. This is something that's going to come up, I think, maybe in stage 3 and 4, but also 5 and 6. But also, of course, it happens from the very beginning, is that our attention is fragmented, meaning we're sort of focusing on the breath, but sort of in the background there's some thoughts about other things going on. And sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes actually in the foreground, the more dominant is we're thinking about something, and in the background we're sort of holding on to the breath a little bit. So this is just like Alan Wallace uses in his, he uses an analogy for this in his book, this idea of static, of like a tuning into a radio station, and that, you know, you're tuning into a radio station, but then you're sort of drifting into another station in the background, or that maybe becomes dominant and your chosen station is not so clear. So this is just part of the training, that, you know, our attention skill is fragmented. And so what we're going to notice is that we're going to go through some phases. I mean, now we sort of, usually what happens is we go completely to whatever that is and get caught up in the distraction. And then we start to notice that we get caught up in the distraction, but we're still sort of holding on to the breath a little bit, even though we're sort of in the distraction. And then as we progress further in the practice, it'll be more that the foreground is the breath, and in the background there's this sort of noise going on, this, and then slowly, slowly that will fade out and it will become more and more clear. So this is just a natural progress.
So, but it's normal. So basically, yeah, it's normal. The main thing is that we try to have our object as the main focus, and then having something in the background sometimes, like it comes up like something like a compulsive thought and it goes away. Because with introspection, you realize that there is a secondary thought.
Sure, sure.
So then okay.
So again, it's just part of the practice, and you just, if you notice it there in the background, then just reapply the mindfulness more. And as you progress in the practice, like I said, that will slowly, slowly move away. But that's normal. That's normal.
I have another question after that, but maybe.
Sure, okay. Anyone else have any questions?
Yeah. are several listed in our
Sure.
But I just wanted to share one more, which is seldom mentioned, I think, in the literature, but I had real difficulties with it at the beginning, and it's the heartbeat, the pulse.
Yeah.
And so it's the feeling that the heart is kind of racing or kind of fast and prominent. And at the same time, one has the feeling that the body is relaxed and even the mind is kind of okay. But still, the heart makes one think that, well, there is some anxiety or agitation, so something's wrong. And obviously, one goes in a loop.
A loop, yeah.
And it races even more, and it's really difficult to get out of it. Mm. I mean, now I have some coping strategies for that, but because it was so strong at the beginning, I was wondering if many people have that, if your students, if a lot of people have that, or maybe someone here experiences the same thing. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, of course, these sorts of things can be fairly common, you know, that we notice something and we get worried about that, and then the worry gets, we're getting worried about worrying and so forth. And so we need to sort of break that cycle. And of course, what can be very helpful there is just to then focus on the anxiety or the worry itself as the object. Because if we, you know, if we notice that our heartbeat's going quickly and we get really worried about that, then just then what we can do is look at the worry itself. And so if we're focusing on the worry or anxiety directly, we're not focusing on what is feeding it. And so often then if we can do that, then it can settle down. So part of that, of course, is practicing what's called acceptance, to accept the fact that the worry is there and not worry about the fact that the worry is there, to break that vicious cycle, is just to notice that and to observe that. And then, like I said, then there's nothing feeding it because you're not focusing on the heartbeat that's feeding that. So this is one of the standard ways of working with that.
It's something I'm doing, but if it doesn't help, then I worked out another strategy, which is to focus on something completely different, to go away from the body.
Sure.
I don't know if that's a good way, but it works.
Yeah.
So then instead of focusing on the breath and on the body, I focus on sounds.
Sure.
And in like several minutes, when I go back to the body, it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, that can be
I'm escaping from the body.
Yeah.
I'm not in.
Yeah, of course, directing your attention elsewhere can be a short-term strategy if it gets overwhelming, but then I think
it's suppressing, isn't it?
Well, it's not suppressing, it's just not processing, it's not dealing with it, it's just avoiding it, which in the short term can be an effective strategy to help to cope, but then I think in the longer term then to directly address it in terms of just observing that worry or anxiety, because then if we can learn to work with that in that way, then we've resolved the issue for that and many other things at the same time. So yes, both we can have a short-term and a long-term strategy and use them together, and that can be effective, yes. Anything else anyone would like to bring up?
Another question, because sometimes I meditate on visualization, on Buddha, the image of Buddha. I like these meditations. I don't do it so often, but I like it. But there is something, I'm not sure if I do it right, because in the literature, they say there are many objects, and especially our bodies and this and that, but there is not so much an explanation what it should be. What it should look like in terms of
Image.
Yes. So my question is, let's say very often when I imagine like the, because I have a Buddha statue, so it's this image that I try to, and usually I think of the hat because the hat is the one that I have is gold plated and it's very clearly all the features. So basically, I go through the hat and sometimes I continue with the whole body. And then again to the head, but very often it kind of as if it pulses. It comes and it goes. It comes and it goes and it gets blurred and it comes and sometimes it's very clear. But it's kind of, it's really as if it pulses back and forth. And then I don't know, should I concentrate? And sometimes it's very interesting because it's beautiful, right? So I can think of the eyes and the mouth and look at it and like the shape of the head and then continue with the whole body. So it's kind of diverse in a way as well, so my mind doesn't get as bored
let's say. Sure.
And I don't know if this is the right way to do it, or should I concentrate only on the eyes or only in the face from a distance?
Mm.
And what is pulsing thing?
Yeah. Well, the pulsing thing, I think, is just that you're still getting more and more clear visualization. So, I mean, I think that's normal for a visualized object, that it's sometimes clear, sometimes not, and oscillating like this, and that will change over time in the practice, I think. The mental image of a Buddha is often emphasized in some of the Tibetan Buddhist traditions as the object for shamatha practice, because in the Tibetan traditions, of course, at the highest level of practice, we talk about tantra or vajrayana. And in that level of practice, of course, there's a lot of visualizing of Buddha in front, visualizing yourself in a fully enlightened form, and so forth. So this practice, shamatha practice of visualizing a Buddha, is very good preparation for that. So this is one of the reasons why in the Tibetan tradition, sometimes the mental image of a Buddha, and of course also it's a virtuous object, and by focusing on it, we may get inspired by the fact that, you know, we're looking at and focusing on an enlightened being, and that's what we want to achieve. So it can also be very inspiring to focus on that. But the reality is, I think for many of us, one is that we're not really that familiar with Buddha. And secondly, many of us have difficulties with visualization, and it can be very complex, and so it can be quite a difficult object even to begin with. So then sometimes what's recommended, if we really want to use that, is, as you said, you said your mental image of a statue you had.
Yeah.
So you can have like a statue or a picture in front of you, and you can begin by using that as the visual object, and then move to the mental image of it. And if it becomes fuzzy, then you can go back to observing that a little bit. And then when you have that, what can be helpful to improve clarity is, as you said, occasionally you can then focus in on a particular area and then scan a little bit to clarify things. So this is okay. And there's a lot of literature on this, on how to do this in the Lam Rim texts, the stages of the path to enlightenment. If you look particularly like in texts like Lama Tsongkhapa, his great treatise on the stages of the path to enlightenment, in the third volume, there's a whole big section on the shamatha practice. And there they talk about usually the mental image of a Buddha. So you can get some information there, and also from some of the Tibetan lamas who really teach that. They also give a lot of oral instruction about these sorts of things, on what to do in those sort of cases. But sounds like what you're doing is fine.
Yeah, because I don't have so much problem of visualizing the image, but I just don't know what to focus on the face, on the whole body, or...
We can focus on the whole body, but then we can... You know, if we want to, we can zoom in on the face to sort of improve the clarity a little bit. So that's okay. That's okay.
One question, probably partly answered, partly not so. Or I have like second question about the feelings, worries, or especially strong feelings like sorrow. So what's your experience? Of course, you can. I'm strong, so I can take that as object and like handle that or in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm meditating and focusing on my breath,
mm-hmm.
and then this sorrow like comes and comes, so letting go or changing object, what your experience?
Yeah. So, of course, in general, if we're doing a shamatha practice, and let's say we're focusing on the breath, and then we have some thought or emotion or some memory come up, of course, the general instruction, of course, is to notice that and then just come back to the breath, keep coming back to the breath, keep coming back to the breath. And so this is the general instruction. And then we saw that yesterday in the shamatha chart here, is that particularly as we progress in the practice as well, sometimes it's not the sort of negative states of mind that come up. Sometimes some really great ideas pop up. And again, the same instruction is to, that's not the right time to get caught up in it, is just let it go and come back to the breath, let it go and come back to the breath, and look at that great idea after the meditation. And the same thing can apply here, is if you have some sorrow or something coming up, and it's fairly persistent, then we can address that as a separate thing, in a separate meditation or after the meditation. It's just notice that, oh, I'm having a lot of these things come up. So we're not trying to like push it away or suppress it, because if you have that come up in the meditation and you try to suppress it, usually it gets stronger because you're having aversion to it. And usually having aversion to these things just magnifies them. So what we can do is just say, okay, this is obviously something important. I'll look at this after the meditation to give yourself permission to do that. Otherwise you'll get into this fight with it and you'll be trying to suppress it and then it'll get worse. So that's one thing we can do. And of course, if you find at some point something is really coming up very strongly, and it's really just overwhelming and we can't let go of it, then we may need to, as a last ditch resort, then maybe break the meditation and deal with that at that time. Yeah. But that would not be the first line approach. Yeah. I mean, that's sometimes in the shamatha practice, it talks about the sort of, you know, if this sort of happens or we're completely lethargic and we can't, you know, then at some point at the end, we may need to just break the meditation, go off and deal with that, or go off and splash some water on our face to wake ourselves up a little bit. So this would sort of be the sort of the last ditch thing to do. Yeah. Okay. Anything else anyone would like to? Yes. The question is? To the dreams, yeah. It's very common in these sorts of retreats for people to have very vivid dreams. Of course, we all dream a lot, but many of us don't often really remember our dreams. But particularly in this sort of shamatha-style practice, it's very common, because of the more clarity of mind, that our dreams can often be much more vivid and we can remember them much more easily than normal. This is very common experience in this retreat. With dreams, then one thing we need to realize is that dreams are symbolic, and that we shouldn't really take dreams literally, because our dreams have their own sort of symbolic language, and we need to, if we want to be able to use our dreams in some way, the first step is to try to understand what our own dream symbolism is. Otherwise, if we take dreams literally, we can come up with some really strange ideas. Like, for example, often in Buddhism, when we talk about doing a particular type of retreat called a purification retreat, where we're trying to purify a lot of our negative thoughts and negative habits and so forth, there are particular retreats to do that in a very intensive way. One of the things that they say in these sorts of retreats is that an actual sign of the fact that we're purifying is to have some very vivid dreams of like vomiting and black things coming out of our body, which is usually pretty scary, you know. So normally if we have some dream about vomiting or black things coming out of our body, we'd sort of freak out a little bit and go, oh, what's all that mean? Whereas in fact, it can mean that we're actually purifying ourselves. And so it's actually a very good positive sign. So therefore we need to really sort of understand that. But again, in general, and what you find is that sometimes in the Tibetan tradition as well, they do these what's called empowerments, like an initiation into some tantric practice. And sometimes they go over 2 days. And in the first day, you're giving some instructions. And then that night, you're asked to look at your dreams and to see what sort of dreams you have. And then the next day, that somehow to be a sign whether, you know, your this initiation or empowerment is something very good for you or not. And so usually they say, you know, look for these and these signs, but usually on the second day, you know, even when His Holiness Dalai Lama sort of gives this instruction, he says, oh, don't pay too much attention to, you know, your dreams. Don't take it too seriously. So I think that's one thing important, is that not to make too much out of the dreams. But if we can really start to understand our dream symbolism, then sometimes dreams can be helpful in terms of giving us some sign about things that maybe we need to deal with in our life. And of course, part of particularly Tibetan Buddhist practice is the highest level. We talk about like dream yoga and so forth. And so if you're interested in more in terms of dreams and doing lucid dreaming and so forth, then actually Alan Wallace has a very good book called Dreaming Yourself Awake, where he himself, and you can find a lot of literature on this on his website, because he really does a lot of work with not just lucid dreaming, but using dreams within the spiritual practice. So if you're really looking to maybe investigate that a little bit more in that direction, then I can really recommend that book from him, The Dreaming Yourself Awake, but also some of his podcasts on his website. In some of his retreats, he does a lot of this dream work as well. So therefore, that can be very helpful in terms of the spiritual path. So that's what I can recommend. Anything else anyone would like to bring up?
Just something small. How about, because usually I never have headaches, and I'm one of these fortunate people who doesn't deal with that suffering. But, for example, today my head is, like, really, I feel it heavy and it's pulsing and, like, headache.
Yeah. Of course, there can be many reasons for that, but it could be that you're just tensing. I mean, that's very common with this nostrils practice, is that people notice a lot of sensations across the forehead, around the eyes, and even stiff neck and headaches. And so this can be a sign that we're really very tight and very tense. And it may be that we got very clear sensations here, but with too much tightness. Yeah, so this sounds like to me it could be that you're just too tight, you're just too tense. So this is very important in this practice, is to monitor this, to monitor the sensations around the eyes. If there's tension around the eyes, a lot of tension across the forehead, the neck particularly, and certainly any sort of headache or tension in the head. And if we're doing this practice, and if we notice any of this, and immediately we need to really emphasize relaxation, relaxation, relaxation. And if we can't release that tension, even if we have clear sensations here, we don't really want to stay there, because we're going to develop headaches, stiffness, and we're going to develop a very bad habit. We're going to develop the habit of being very tense in our meditation, and that's going to be hard to change. So if we can't release it, then don't stay here. Go back to the abdomen or full body. Move your attention away from the head. Bring it down to the abdomen or the full body, and just work with relaxation, relaxation, relaxation. And then when you notice that you become more relaxed, then we can go back here. But don't stay here with that tension, because it's not really going. Even if you have very clear sensations here, doesn't matter. If you notice any tension here, we need to relax, relax, relax. And if we can't, then don't stay there. Go back down, move your attention down, and just work with relaxation for some time. Maybe even for the rest of the session, to relax. Because that's so, so important. Okay? Anything else anyone would like to bring up? Sorry? Oh, yes. Yes, I noticed that myself. I'm not a heavy coffee drinker, but one or two cups a day. And I notice that when I stop, sometimes I have a headache from that withdrawal symptom. But maybe that's something we can go through then.
And it also, I noticed it. So when
No. If you notice any tension here and you can relax and release it, you can stay there. That's fine. But if you can't release it, then we need to move away and move down. So you don't have to go to the abdomen. If you notice some tension building up, and then you just really on the out-breath in particular, emphasize relax, 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 and then you relax, then you can stay there. That's fine. That's fine. So, one thing we need to be, of course, is that we're focusing on the tactile sensations and we're not visualizing. Sometimes people visualize, particularly people who do that a lot in their work or whatever, this visualization. And so then when we are focusing on the physical sensations of the breath, often then people have a habit of visualizing that, and often they visualize the breath going out here and coming down and going down and back out. So we need to distinguish between our visualization of the breath or some part of the body and the actual tactile sensations. I think Alan Wallace mentioned that yesterday when we talked about that. And so to let go of any sort of visualization. But of course we will have sometimes strange sensations as well. So, but try not to, get caught up in visualizing the breath. That's all. Yeah, so maybe again then you can try to meditate a little bit with the eyes open, and that may be helpful to avoid sort of having that sense out here. So maybe you can try that. You mean how? The question is why we're tying. It's because we don't have to do this, but it's just when we're breathing out, it's a natural time to relax and to let go. So this is a sort of a more natural occasion when we can relax and let go, and when we breathe in is a more natural time to become more alert. So we don't have to do that on every breath, but as a beginner, to use the in and out breath as a sort of a reminder of us to do those things can be helpful. So we don't, it's not like we have to do, it's not like we have to only let go of distractions on the out breath and only focus on the in breath. It's just that those two occasions are a very natural time to do those things. Because as a beginner, we tend to either drift into distraction or drift into dullness. And if we're sort of doing this balancing act on each breath, that helps us to stay more balanced. But if you find that too much doing it on each breath, then we don't need to do that. It's just that the breathing out is a very natural time to really relax and let go. And breathing in is a more natural time to sharpen the focus. That's all.
What I mean, if I concentrate on breathing anyway, breathing in and out, then I feel, for example, dullness or distraction. Then what is that? I concentrate more, for example, if I want to release distraction, and I concentrate more to out-breath.
No, it's not a matter of that. It's just a matter of that we can, when we're breathing out, we can use that as the opportunity to release distractions. And when we're breathing in, to use that as an opportunity to sharpen the focus. That's all. As a reminder that when we're breathing in, sharpen the focus. And when we're breathing out, release. So it's not a matter of focusing more on the in-breath or focusing more on the out-breath.
Then I'm just reminding myself.
Yeah.
How I relax, for example.
Yeah, exactly. To use those...
Relax now and breathe in, then I...
Sharpen the focus.
Okay.
That's all.
Just like a reminder in my mind.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the practice now. Let's do one 24-minute session before dinner. So we begin by settling the body into its natural state of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. Keeping the body as still as possible, avoiding any unnecessary movement. Allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. Setting the mind in a state of ease and relaxation. Simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment. Through focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. then narrow the focus and focus on the sensations of the breath at the entrance of the nostril. Keeping the body nice and relaxed, and keeping the mind nice and relaxed. Relaxed and alert.